Welcome back to Strength 101, the podcast where we break down fitness and nutrition to its simplest forms so that you can get the results that you want. It's me, it's Nick, I'm back, and that means we're doing a solo session, which means we're going to dive into some in-depth topics. We're going to do some learning today, and today I've been waiting on this one for a while. I know it's a hot topic. There's a ton of information out there already about it, but I want to give you the top of the trees on GLP-1 agonists. That means Ozempic. Insert the names of the other ones. I don't really know because I don't use them. So Ozempic, those other weight loss drugs that are so popular right now that so many people are on, they're clearly extremely effective. But today I want to give you guys a rundown of what these drugs actually do, what considerations you need to take into account if you're going to take them, or if you are helping a friend decide whether they should take them, and then just my opinion on whether these are a good thing or a bad thing, or maybe just a neutral thing and it doesn't really matter. And I think what's so complicated about this is even the terminology around these weight loss drugs, it's really hard to understand what they are. And so today I dug into the research really heavily, and then I want to give you guys kind of the Cliff Notes version of what's going on. So this should be a very simple and understandable version of what these drugs actually do. But before I get into that, I want to give a shout out to one of our members. So at Strength Academy, we're a community, and it's not all about lifting weights. We do a ton of community events. We try to give back as much as we can. We're getting better and better at that. For example, upcoming this Saturday, we have a fundraiser for a local community member who is battling cancer and has a young family, and we're getting money from the community to give to that family so they can get through this hard time in their life. I want to shout out Mark F. He is somebody who has volunteered both at our member party and for this fundraiser, and he just always is there. He almost melds into the background a little bit because he's so humble and helpful with everything that he does that he could show up, do a ton of work behind the scenes, and never ask for any credit for it, and he'd just be on his way, and he'd be back for the next thing. Mark, thank you so much for all the contribution you give to this gym. He's also somebody who's been a business consultant in the past. I've had many conversations with him where he's given me a point in the right direction. He's given me reassurance that I'm doing something right. He's given me some helpful criticism about things I should consider about how to make our business better. And I just really appreciate the guy. So Mark F., thank you for being a help to me, a help to our community, both inside the gym and the community at large. And we need more people like you, man. And like, so thank you. And we hope that more people decide to take that path in their life. So let's get into Ozempic and all these great things. Like I mentioned, it's very complex trying to learn about these things, and I'm sure that you can watch reports on the news about this stuff, and you can listen to people talk about it on Instagram. And I'm not a doctor, guys. So take everything I say today with a grain of salt. What I'm trying to do is dig into the research on this stuff, get an overview of what these are. I'm not going to tell you all the complications of it. I'm not going to tell you whether it's necessarily good or bad. These are all my opinions, but I'm going to try to give you an overview of what they are actually doing, because I think that's the hardest thing for people to understand. It kind of gets branded as like a magic pill. In fact, I was watching, this just popped in my head. I was watching TV. I thought this was a little bit like maybe they should get sued for this. And one of those companies that sells this drug had an ad, and the background music was, "Oh, oh, oh, it's magic, you know." And I was like, that has to be false advertising. Does it not? For you to actually insinuate that the weight loss is magic. It's not magic. We'll get into why. But let's dig in, guys. So first thing I wanted to point out, because I started reading this research article this morning about this, and it just was a really good indicator of how complex people make things, especially research people. This is why I didn't ever want to go and finish my PhD, because I was like, well, I would rather have the knowledge of how to learn things and translate it to the general public than just work with people who only understand these esoteric, complex systems of communication. And here's what I mean by that. I'm going to read you the first paragraph of this article that I was reading. And some of you guys, it might make sense to you. Some of you, it may not. But it's my job to understand this stuff and then translate it into terminology that we can all understand. Here we go. Glucagon-like peptide 1, GLP-1, released from gut enteroendocrine cells, controls meal-related glycemic excursions through augmentation of insulin and inhibition of glucagon secretion. GLP-1 also inhibits gastric emptying and food intake, actions maximizing nutrient absorption while limiting weight gain. Here, I review the circuits engaged by endogenous versus pharmacological GLP-1 action, highlighting key GLP-1 receptor positive cell types and pathways transducing metabolic and non-glycemic GLP-1 signals. What the bleep this out, Stet. Jesus, man, like, how is anybody supposed to dig into information other than news articles and figure out what the hell this means? And this is just a greater point about how it's so difficult to find good information on the internet, because how many people out there can read that stuff, read through an entire article like that, and actually get the information from the research article and then translate it into useful terms? I'm hoping that Strength Academy and myself can be one of those people that does that. And so I'm going to do my best today for you guys. So let's start with what these drugs actually do, the Ozempics of the world. These drugs, when you take them, they simply interrupt the body's normal signaling of whether or not you feel fed. And so normally, without these drugs, you eat a meal, your body signals to uptake the energy that you just got from that meal, the protein, the carbs, the fats, all that stuff goes into your bloodstream. Your body signals to uptake that energy from the bloodstream into your fat cells, your muscle cells, and your brain cells. So without these drugs, you eat a meal and your body signals, hey, energy just came in. We need to distribute that to the areas that can utilize it. And this is done with a hormone called insulin. You've probably heard of insulin. It's commonly talked about in diabetic circles, all right? Anything that's having to do with the pancreas and diabetes, insulin is a big key word. Insulin works hand in hand with another hormone called glucagon. Simply put, when your blood sugar rises after you've eaten a meal, insulin is just a hormone. It's just a signal that's getting sent out that tells your body to send, let's just call it sugar for now, blood sugar, to send the sugar into the tissues so that it can get used or stored. When their blood sugar drops too low, so imagine I eat a meal, insulin gets signaled out, and all the blood sugar that has accumulated in my bloodstream gets sent into the tissues, and sometimes that sugar drops too low. So your body has another hormone called glucagon that when that low blood sugar is sensed, glucagon comes and says, hey, we need to break down stored carbohydrates and stored fats in our body to bring the blood sugar back up to normal levels. And this is how it happens all day throughout life. It goes up and down and up and down, and your body has these processes in place to make sure that you are regulated, right? That's called homeostasis. Your body wants you to stay in a fairly regular state, and it only has problems when things get too high or too low. And so this is the normal process. And so what these GLP-1s do is they make your body act and think as though it was just fed. So these drugs increase insulin production. So that means it increases that signaling hormone that says send the sugar into the tissues, and it inhibits glucagon production, which means it inhibits the signal that says, let's break things down and pull them back into the bloodstream. And what does that mean to me and you? Next to diddly, right? Like, I'm still using too complex terminology here. What these drugs really do is they really work their magic on the effects of the brain, all right? So let's kind of forget about everything I just said. So why'd you say it, Nick? I don't know. I'm just trying to give you guys some information. Some of you that are like nurses and stuff will probably find that interesting. But what these drugs really do is they work their magic on the effects inside your head, in the brain, because these drugs basically tell your body that it's in a fed state so that your appetite decreases dramatically. We have a slide in our body composition presentation. So our body composition is our accountability weight loss coaching program where we get people to lose weight over the course of 8 weeks by getting into a caloric deficit. If you want more information about caloric deficit, how to lose weight, there's different podcasts on that. We're not going to get into it right now. In short order, you have to be in a calorie deficit in order to lose weight. That's a law of thermodynamics. If you're still somebody who thinks that you can eat as much as you want and lose weight because you eat healthy foods, this is not the podcast for you. Just change over to something else. You know, go chase that tail for a while. In one of these slides that we have in our body composition presentation at the very beginning of the program, we put a bunch of different diets up around the word calorie deficit. And it's like vegetarian, Atkins diet, keto diet, body composition, GLP-1s, all these different things. And what we're saying to the group is that all these things do the same thing. Every single diet that has ever worked for anybody is just a different way of marketing to you and tricking you to get into a calorie deficit. And Weight Watchers, for example, let's use Weight Watchers. Weight Watchers uses a point system. so that you get a point limit on your day. That's just them saying calorie deficit without saying calorie deficit. They're just telling you to run a different system so that they will convince you to get into a calorie deficit. And so all weight loss happens this way. And it's the same thing that happens with these GLP-1s. But the difference is the mechanism of action. These GLP-1s, they basically tell your body from a gut motility and from a blood sugar standpoint that you've just been fed. And they also tell your brain that you've just been fed so that your appetite is drastically decreased so that you eat less, so you get into a calorie deficit and you lose weight. And it's drastic for a lot of people, right? This is why these are considered like a magic drug, is because when your appetite is suppressed that heavily and you're just not hungry, maybe you go from overeating by 500 to 1,000 calories a day to suddenly undereating by 500 to 1,000 calories a day, and you can lose, you know, 20, 30, 40, 80 pounds really, really quickly because you just are not driven to eat like a normal human would be. I know this can cause some problems, but we'll get into that. So in summary, before we move on to things that we should consider about these drugs mimic a fed state. They decrease your desire to eat, and it causes you to finally achieve a calorie deficit and lose the weight. You lose weight in the same way as any other weight loss program with these drugs. You get into a caloric deficit. This just makes the psychological portion much easier. In our body composition program, we tell people to eat high protein levels because that is our best way of naturally suppressing their hunger, because hunger goes up when protein levels are down and muscle damage is high. So by elevating the protein levels that people eat, we are suppressing their hunger. GLP-1s, they just tell your brain already that you're not hungry, and then you get to progress with your weight loss. So here's some considerations. If you're somebody who's thinking about taking these drugs, or you have a friend that's taking these drugs, you know, often people will think about taking these drugs. They'll talk to a doctor. That doctor may not know that much about these. Like, a lot of these drugs, these doctors get handed a pamphlet from the person who is selling the drugs. This is somebody who wants them to purchase and push these drugs. And so I'm not harshing on doctors, but you do have to take all information you get, including information from me, with a grain of salt. So if you're thinking about taking these drugs and you don't feel like you got much information from your doctor, or some people just ask their friends what they think and their friends are like, yeah, totally do it. Awesome. I would love to lose 50 pounds too. Like, here's some things for you to tell them to consider, or for you to consider yourself if you start on them. One is energy levels. Since these drugs interrupt the normal process of regulating your blood sugar, it's very likely that you could become hypoglycemic. And what that means, that's just a fancy word for low blood sugar. And so I actually... This is the level of research that I do on these, and, you know, take it for what you will. But when I wanted to know more about this, I started looking this up on Reddit. I actually love going on Reddit because it's actually people giving their anecdotal experience with things. And so I ended up on a thread where it was a bunch of people who have been on these drugs before talking about their energy levels. And there was mixed reactions to their energy levels. Some people said that they really did have crashes and low energy levels on the drugs. Some people said that their energy was better. And what that comes down to is it really depends on people's habits, right? Because here's what happens when you get low blood sugar. When you get low blood sugar, you get a dizziness feeling. You get nausea. You get fogginess. And then you can possibly even crash and fall asleep if it gets too much. It's kind of the same feeling as when you first wake up in the morning. Technically, your blood sugar is low when you first wake up in the morning. And that groggy feeling, that feeling of wanting to go back asleep, that sleep momentum, that's the feeling that you could get in the middle of the day if you have low blood sugar. Some people might experience this if they hit a really hard workout and they didn't eat before that workout, their blood sugar's low. Or if they don't eat for a while after a workout and they're really low body fat, they might have a situation where they have low blood sugar. And to avoid this, most doctors or anybody who is helping somebody on these drugs should be prescribing something that I actually got this term from that Reddit thread that's called mechanical eating. And so all that means is that you got to eat multiple small meals a day to make sure your body is actually getting a consistent and constant flow of fuel and energy into it, even though you may not be hungry for those meals. And I am just going to point out real quick that I feel like it's kind of ironic that in order to take these drugs safely and not have some of the side effects, you actually have to adopt the same habits that we ask people to adopt when they're going through weight loss the natural way. And so I think whether you are going to go on these drugs and have it be a safe thing, or whether you're going to hit highs and lows with it, is really dependent on your habits. We'll get more into that. I think on these drugs, there's a reasonable fear from my standpoint that if you were taking these drugs and your appetite was so low that you're not eating much, and then you continue to train and you start working out, that you potentially could get low blood sugar, similar to people who don't eat before they start training and they hit a really hard session. And so it's something to consider. You might want to make sure that you're eating snacks throughout the day, even if you don't feel like eating them. And this is where caloric control is super important. Like you don't want to eat so much that you don't lose the weight, but you need to eat at least something throughout the day so that your body is constantly getting a fuel source into your bloodstream and into your tissues and into your brain. The second consideration is muscle loss. And we see this with people, right? Like, what's the typical view of somebody who took Ozempic and it was massively successful for them? They kind of look like their body wilted. They kind of look like you get flowers fresh from the store, and I'm not a gardener, so I don't take care of them. If I get somebody flowers, I'm not putting them in proper water. I'm not giving them any food. And eventually they just kind of like suck dry. They wilt a little bit. They look a little bit sad. And that is honestly how some people's skin and bodies look when they're on these drugs. And like, I'm not making fun of them or anything, but it's definitely a common occurrence. And you can find threads on it all over the internet. People talking about Ozempic face, people talking about how skinny people look, but it doesn't look necessarily like a healthy skinny. And I think a big contributor to this is muscle loss. When the body is calorie restricted, weight loss is not just limited to fat. This is not just with Ozempic or any of these drugs. It's also with if you were just to go on a low calorie diet and you're not training or anything, your body is not going to just want to get its energy from your fat stores. It could also get it from your muscle mass, especially if you're somebody who doesn't train. Muscle mass really works on an if you don't use it, you lose it basis. And so it's going to be very important over the course of your time on these drugs to recognize that you may lose muscle if you don't adopt a training habit. And so if somebody wants to get on Ozempic and they don't want to get muscle loss from it so that they don't get weaker, they don't lose the kind of the structures in their face, all these different things, they don't have super skinny arms when they're done, they don't just feel worse on a day-to-day basis, then they need to have some type of strength training habit. And even just stimulating the muscles, not necessarily being on some type of crazy strength training program, not being on some type of crazy bodybuilding program, not looking to maximize muscle mass, just stimulating the muscles and getting enough protein in is going to completely take care of this problem so that your body preferentially breaks down the fat instead of breaking down the muscle. The other thing that you have to kind of consider is like, how many calories are you really taking in? Like we mentioned this already once, but I'm going to hit on it again. If you get on these drugs and all of a sudden you're eating like 500 calories a day, you're just going to be eating your body at such a fast level to make sure that you stay fueled and stay alive that you're not going to be able to dictate whether or not it's fat or muscle that's being eaten. And so you could have complications from that. And sometimes when your body eats muscle, like you have lifelong complications from it. The muscles don't function the same way that they used to. And so I think it's really important that if somebody wanted to take Ozempic and do it in the safest and the most effective way possible, they would take it. They would try to stay on the same amount of food every single day and see how they feel. And they would strength train 2 to 3 times a week, definitely with weights. Okay. Cardio is not going to help you stimulate the muscle mass the way that you want to avoid that muscle loss. And so strength training is going to be super important. And the last one is that Ozempic face and the Ozempic skin that I mentioned, and this is common. We were talking about it in class today. Everybody knows somebody who got on this drug and they lost a ton of weight. They look great comparatively to maybe where they were, but something just looks a little bit different than somebody who lost weight the natural way. And it can be described as like, they just look like they aged. I've noticed that some people with this, they look like their skin just doesn't retain the same color. Like there's not blood flow there. They almost look a little bit pale. And definitely that they have like this saggy skin. Now, this isn't that dissimilar to what you would see if somebody went on a true starvation diet. So let's just imagine like somebody went on the show Alone or Survivor or whatever, and they were losing weight drastically fast. They're going to have saggy skin. They're going to have a sunken face. Like they're going to look like they lost weight in a not so healthy way. And I think some people who are not monitoring how much food they're intaking on these drugs are going to have that effect. And they might be psyched about their weight loss, but it might not come with them looking the way that they thought they would. I think everybody imagines if they get on this drug, they're just going to become the more toned, healthy version of themselves. And that doesn't seem to have been the result. But I do think you can do it that way. Now, I do think that some of this like pale skin color and stuff is enhanced by the continual low blood sugar that you're going to fight on these drugs. But I think that this can be avoided. Like I said, we see this in anybody who's lost weight extremely fast. Even people that aren't on the drugs, some people's skin just doesn't rebound immediately, and some people's never does. This is like a genetic thing for some people. Some people just do not have the same elasticity in their skin, and so some people will lose weight and their skin will tighten up right away, and some people will lose weight and they'll deal with some like skin flaps on their stomach for the rest of their lives. And so some of that you can't avoid. So what about the face specifically? The aged face look is also not dissimilar to what we see in older populations who are in that stage of life where they're losing weight and losing muscle mass extremely fast. And the sagging skin just naturally from losing the weight does enhance the look of wrinkles. And so I think this is solved by the two things that we mentioned already. Are you lifting enough weights to maintain your muscle mass? And are you eating enough so that you're not drastically starving yourself so that you don't get the sagging skin and the drastic weight loss without the immediate skin rebound? But it does happen, right? It's like we see older populations lose weight fast and lose muscle fast, and then they just look like their face is sunken in. They look like they have more wrinkles. It looks like they just have saggy skin on their face. And we're seeing that in some people who are in their 30s on Ozempic just simply because they probably are taking the drugs. They're drastically reducing their food. They're losing 80 pounds over the course of 6 months to a year, and their body just can't rebound fast enough. Whereas if they took the process just a little bit slower, and they were a little bit more patient with it, and they strength trained while they were doing it, and they ate regularly while they were doing it, then they would probably have a much more healthy, natural looking weight loss. Okay, so now let's talk about what my stance on these drugs are. You know, I don't think they're all bad. I really, at first, my initial gut reaction when I heard about these drugs was, well, it's a cheat, and most cheats end up with some type of repercussion. It just happens all the time. Like crash diets don't work the way people think they will. Diets where you take out an entire macronutrient group like carbs or fats or something like that don't work the way people want them to. But I've changed my tune on this, especially after researching it. I think done the right way, these drugs can actually be quite miraculous for people, especially in certain circumstances. So let's say, for example, somebody is morbidly obese, type 2 diabetic. They are legitimately having massive health problems because of their weight. Here's the fact of the matter, guys, is we do not see people 60 years old and older walking around at 400 plus pounds. People who are at that level of body fat and that level of body weight simply do not make it past their 50s and 60s. I'll challenge you to show me somebody who's 70, 80 years old who weighs 300 plus pounds even. You just don't see it. And so we know there's a correlation there that they are on a path to an early and quick death. And so if they've tried other things and it hasn't worked for them and they're on that path and they're starting to have those heart and those blood sugar complications, then this drug should be taken by those people. Yeah, it might have some side effects. It might have its own negatives, but I don't think it's going to be as immediately damaging as being at that high of body fat and body weight is going to be. So for the person who is 400, 500 pounds, maybe even 350 pounds, depending on your male or female, and you're starting to get those complications and you've been a type 2 diabetic for a long time and you haven't been able to make the habit changes or things aren't working for you, then you should definitely consider this. And I would see it as a net positive for those people. I think likely when used responsibly, and if you use these drugs as a short-term means to an end, I think they're relatively safe, especially considering the things we said before. If you use them safely, meaning that you don't drastically diet, you make sure you maintain a decent level of food intake, you make sure you still weight train, and then you try to make habit changes along the way, then used in the short term, it can get you from 350 pounds down to 200 pounds. And if you change your habits along the way, then you can maintain that body weight without having to be on these drugs. This is not dissimilar. I'm saying that word a lot today. This is not dissimilar to my dad always had this view on antidepressants. I believe he took some when he was in his 30s when he was going through some hard things. And he always said that antidepressants were supposed to be a means to an end. It was supposed to give you that boost, that kind of seeing the light in life, helping your brain chemicals come up to the proper levels so that you can make the changes in your life so that when you go off the drugs, you don't drop back into that depression. And argue with me all you want on that. That's just my take on it. That's my dad's take. Shout out to him, okay? Go and yell at him. Send him the hate mail. But I think it's the same thing with this. If you want to use it as a means to an end and you're focused on habit change in the short term, then I don't think there's going to be lasting negative effects for you. Let's talk about what negative effects could be. And honestly, like that's the same thing with like bariatric surgery, right? Like if somebody has bariatric surgery, which is the surgery where they staple down your stomach to a tiny, tiny little stomach so that you can't eat very much. Those people that do that lose weight and they change their habits along the way. They have lifelong success because of that surgery. And then there's people who don't change their habits and they figure out how to eat constantly so they continue to get the same amount of calories. And then they're back in the situation they were even though they had the surgery. So this is no different. Habits are habits, guys. We coach habits more than anything else in body comp. And we always tell our people in body composition program for weight loss that we will never give them a meal plan. And the reason is because we want to coach them to make their own decisions and create their own habits and create their own change. If we gave somebody a meal plan and we told them to follow it for 8 weeks, they might lose weight. But as soon as that meal plan is gone or they don't have to adhere to it, they're going to go right back to their old habits of eating. And so it's not sustained weight loss. You have to, if you want sustained weight loss, you can't just address the calorie intake. You have to address the habits that create the calorie intake. And so it's the same thing with these drugs. Now, the question that I think we have to consider is, are there going to be people who use these drugs for most of their lives? Are there going to be people who have had a weight problem through their whole 20s, get on these drugs at 30 years old, and then try to get off of them multiple times in their life, but because they didn't change their habits, that hunger comes back immediately when you get off the drugs. And so they keep getting off of them and getting back on them and getting off of them and getting back on them. And they take these drugs for most of their life from age 30 to age 60. What's going to be the problems that occur from that type of long-term intake of these drugs? And I'm going to make some bold predictions on this. One thing that stands out to me that makes me nervous about these is that these drugs increase beta cell growth in the pancreas. I know that doesn't mean a lot to people. Basically, it causes hypergrowth of the cells in the pancreas. That's how they produce more insulin. And anytime I hear the term hypergrowth, I get nervous about cancer. That's kind of like why cancer relates to obesity so heavily. It's also why cancer is a potential complication of pregnancy. It's also why cancer is also a potential issue if you're somebody who's taking steroids, is because you're putting your body into a hypergrowth state. And if you're in a hypergrowth state and you're hyperfed, then cancer can grow extremely quickly and it can spread really quickly. And some of the things that the research has found about these drugs is that they increase the growth of the pancreatic cells, and they also decrease something called apoptosis. And apoptosis is our natural process in our body for scheduled cancer cell death. So just a quick little thing on apoptosis. Our body is constantly identifying small levels of potentially precancerous cells and deleting them from our body. It's killing them off naturally. And if you're in a hypergrowth state, the chances that that happens is lower. And so it can lower apoptosis. That means there's a higher chance for pancreatic cancer to become a problem. And so that's my bold prediction for these drugs, is if somebody's on it for 30 years, I think they may have a chance of developing pancreatic cancer. And that's a fear of mine because that's a nasty disease. I had an uncle that died of pancreatic cancer. And it was a terrible process for him and his family. But not to get too low on this, I do think that possibly could get blunted by the fact that they're in a calorie deficit though. Because that's one of the best things you can do for your fight against precancerous cells and against the potential for cancer to get out of hand in your body, is to actually go through periods of weight loss and go through periods of a caloric deficit. This is my last analogy, and then we're gonna cut this off. You guys know I love analogies. I just found that analogous thinking is like the best way to understand complex concepts in life. So here's the clean your room analogy for how your body kind of clears out metabolic waste and fights against potential for cancer. If you're busy in your life, your job's busy, your kids are busy, your life's busy, your house doesn't get cleaned as well. Maybe your room gets messy. It starts to pile up laundry. You haven't vacuumed in a while. There's a couple Sprite cans and some fruit snacks wrappers next to your bed, or at least that's where it is in my house. And then what happens? Like, you get a break, you get a long weekend with nothing going on, the kids go to the grandparents, whatever it is, and you clean the house. Your body does the same thing. If you're constantly in a hyperfed state, if you're eating all the time, then your body is constantly storing food and utilizing food, and it's in an anabolic state. But when it goes to a catabolic state, when you give it a break, when you give it a calorie deficit, when you give it a period of weight loss, it goes through its natural clearing out processes. It clears the cells of metabolic waste. It takes care of precancerous cells. It goes through its natural process of keeping you healthy and keeping you safe. And so I think that over the course of time, it's always healthier for people to go through periods of weight loss. And that's why I am on the fence about this pancreatic cancer prediction, because on one hand, causing hypergrowth and hyperactivity in the pancreas has the possibility for developing pancreatic cancer. However, being in a calorie deficit for long periods of time is one of the best fights against precancerous cells. And so maybe that's blunted. And if that's the case, then frankly, I don't have many concerns about these drugs. Now, time will tell. It always does. We just don't know until we've actually had these drugs in people's system for 30 some years. Now, personally, I'm not somebody who is going to take that risk. However, I understand why some people would. Now, do I think that people should take it for purely aesthetic reasons? God, I don't know. Like I said, me personally, I don't think it's worth the risk. But then again, like I'm happy with my aesthetics. So who am I to sit here and say that? I don't know what it's like to be in the head of somebody who feels like they've been fighting a weight loss battle for 20 years and that they don't have any other options and they really dislike the person they see in the mirror. Maybe that's worth the risk for you. And that's always an individual decision. And you're never going to get any shade from me about it. But you know, the purpose of this podcast was really to just give you an overview and kind of give you some things to think about, some considerations. And so if you're somebody who is thinking about taking these drugs, hopefully you learned something today. It gave you something to pickle on. At the end of the day, it's your decision. Every single decision we make comes with consequences. If we do something, there are consequences. If we decide not to do something, there are consequences. You just have to be okay with the potential consequences and your life's going to be okay. Guys, that was Strength 101. You can find other information from us about fitness and nutrition, but also you can find our Trailer Talk episodes, which are about randomness and craziness and us just loving our lives. You can find those at Strength 101 on Instagram. You can find us at Strength 101 Podcast on TikTok and at Strength 101 on YouTube. That was Strength 101. Peace out.